This podcast episode is with Dr. Michaela Sill and is the second half of a webinar we did, part of the Australian Wool Innovation and the Livestock Collective Partner Program. We hoped that by also converting it to a podcast, it would provide as many growers as possible the opportunity to be able to listen and gain knowledge on these topics. This second part is a Vaccination 101, covering topics such as what vaccines are right for your property and what we should be vaccinating for, where and when. The first half discussed disease identification on farm, and you'll see it in the previous podcast episode.
Okay, so all about vaccination. So we've talked about disease investigation. The whole point of vaccination really is that we're trying to prevent disease, right? So a lot of people don't really know what makes up a vaccine, but essentially we've got two parts to a vaccine. We've got the antigen, which we want our body to react to, right? So it can either be a live vaccine like our scabbard, or it's a killed bug, right? So we're not introducing that bug to that animal. The other part is the adjuvant. So this is a fancy word for carrier. So what this is essentially doing is it is encouraging our body to have that reaction, right? So some carrier agents are more better than others. Like you look at our OJD vaccine. That's a once in a lifetime. So it evokes a, helps evoke a really big reaction, right? But it can also have the negative effect of causing those localized tissue reactions as well. But essentially the whole point of the carrier is to promote the body to find that bug and react to that bug, right? So whether it's killed or live, right? So essentially all we're doing with vaccinations is we're just trying to train the body to fight disease. Like pre-season training for footy, you don't just run out on the footy field, you've got to get some pre-training, otherwise we break down. Not that I'm a footy player or anything like that, but for you guys that are. So you don't want to be breaking down, right? So essentially, to understand, I've got this graph here from Zoetis produced this. So we've got here our line here, which is where we've got antibody levels. So an antibody is what is produced by our body in response to an antigen, so the live or killed bug, right? So this is good antibody levels to make sure that animal's protected, right? So when a lamb is born, they're relying solely on their maternal antibodies. So what I mean by maternal antibodies is that's what they get from their colostrum, that first lot of milk. The ewe is giving all those antibodies that she's got herself across to that lamb. So that's giving them that protection until we can get in there and do their lamb marking, right? So this tends to drop off between 6 to 12 weeks. It can be quite variable, but it tends to be that area. So hopefully we're putting in our lamb marking vaccination there. So this is called like our priming dose, right? We're just giving them a bit of exposure there to get a bit of that response, right? The problem is with this priming dose is it's only short-term. It doesn't provide long-term protection, right? So this is why it's important that we give that second dose at weaning, because that is really just spiking it off, getting those lambs' immune response really up and going to give them longevity in that protection, right? So this isn't the case for all vaccines, like OJD, once in a lifetime, but this is for our general clostridial ones, right? So then we give that annual booster, because as they start to wane, we want to boost them up again. And one of the key things for that is what we just spoke about, is we want those antibodies level in that ewe to be sufficient so she's transferring across sufficient maternal antibodies to protect that lamb, right? So it's all about having that cycle of protection so that we're getting the best lamb survivability. So prevent what we can prevent, because there's so many things in life we can't. So just work on what we can. Okay. So as you can see here, just that one dose of vaccine doesn't give us a hell of a lot of protection. But by giving that booster, we're getting that good amount of protection there, right? So that's just kind of explaining how vaccines work, right? The other thing to be aware of with vaccines, right, is it's not just giving the vaccine, it's also about the animal we're giving that vaccine to. So here we've got on this axis is like the immune response of that animal, And this is the percentage of animals, right, that we vaccinated. So we tend to get this bell curve. So we get a majority of the animals get good, adequate protection, right? We get a small proportion that are unbelievable protection, like awesome, awesome. But we also have a level down here that have a poor response, whether it's our application of it, you know, did we misfire or, you know, but a lot of it comes down to the animal itself, right? And it can be that it's deficient because micronutrients are really important in us developing that immune response, like copper, zinc, selenium, manganese, and especially zinc is an important one. So a lot of times by having other things within our vaccine can help them. So like having our selenium within our vaccine can help with that immune response as well. But the other thing is, can be, if animals are in shit condition, like really poor, doing it tough, they're more likely to be down in this bottom area because they don't have the ability to form that good response. So if we've got a high proportion of lambs or even ewes, you know, with our pre-lambing vaccine in poor condition, we're going to get a poorer response, right? But there's also sometimes the incidents where if an animal goes into an environment where it's challenged a lot, right, like put in a high challenge environment or those kind of things, like pop kidney is definitely one of them. If we put him into an environment where they're highly likely to get pop kidney, we can even get a proportion of these animals here that aren't protected, right? But it's important that if we're vaccinating animals, we want to make sure that they've got good nutrition, good condition, of good health when we're giving it, so we get the most out of a vaccine. So we want to make sure we're making the most out of our cheapest insurance we've got available to us. Insurance costs us a bloody fortune, but vaccination is one of our cheapest ones, right? So it's some of those things to be considering when you're vaccinating or if you get an incidence of disease afterwards and go, oh, that vaccine was shit. Sometimes we can go, okay, nah, a proportion of those animals were doing it tough. It was a tough season, you know, those kind of things to keep in mind. But don't drop off your vaccine because of that, because we want to make sure if we've got nutritionally challenged or immunocompromised animals, we want to make sure we're giving them as much protection as we can. So I just don't think it's an excuse to drop it off, okay? So there's been a lot of surveys, and I always like to say, okay, where are we sitting in WA in terms of what producers are doing? I talk to a lot of my clients, so a lot of this data, it's not surprising whenever I'm dispensing medication, I get a bit of a vaccination history. Dispensing ACE, I find more information out by asking all these questions about what they're doing with their vaccinations and all that, and we have a bit of a chat. But in terms of WA and also the state, like nationally, so this was a survey from AWI from 2021, and of producers that responded, 91% of people vaccinate and 9% don't, which you can see in WA, we're slightly better. We're at 92. Now, when are people vaccinating? Nationally, you can see here probably about 66, I suppose, nationally do pre-lambing, almost 100% right up there, 98, I'd say, there do lamb marking, and probably around that 74, 75, whatever mark, do it at weaning. Not surprised, it didn't surprise me here, we're probably back a bit in less people doing the pre-lambing, but a majority of people are doing the lamb marking, you know, in line with nationally, we're probably slightly back with our weaning, right? But this is not judging, it's just getting a bit of an overview of what happens between the different states and different nationally what people are doing. Because like we all like to compare and see what other people are doing and am I doing the same, am I doing different? So this is a good way of just having a quick overview of that. So then this was looking at in an earlier survey, like what stages people are vaccinating. And this is nationally, this isn't by state. So 49% of producers are doing a landmarking weaning and doing a booster, right? Now, 21% are doing it just at marking and weaning, 15% just marking, and it doesn't surprise me, 8% pre-lambing and marking, and 6% don't vaccinate. So this is just kind of giving a bit of an overview of what different people do. I think a majority, depending on the area, it's different. A lot of people do vaccinate at all stages, and I think we'd probably be slightly higher in just the marking and weaning for the state, just as my perception. No data, just purely my perception. Okay. Something I often get asked about as well is, what is the best site to vaccinate? My dad always did it in the flank or, right behind the ear, in the tail fold. I still see some injection sites in the cheek. This is where the best recommended site is coming down. And I really like this diagram because it shows you why this is a good site. We're avoiding all these salivary gland and lymph nodes and blood vessels, plus these two bones. There's an atlas bone up there and it's got wings that stick out. And sometimes if you go a bit deep, you can hit it. So that is the recommended site to go. And on the landmarking cradle, just pull the head to one side, go one side and then go the other. But you guys have done 10 times more, if hell of a lot more vaccinating than me. So with all your animals, but that is the area. And it's easy to get to. So you really want to give it underneath the skin. So we've got the muscle layer and we've got the subcut layer, so underneath the skin, and then we've got the skin. So you really want to be giving it under the skin. If we go in the muscle, that's where we can get reactions and damage to the muscle, and it can end up costing you guys money. So that is definitely something. So you want to make sure that you are using like that quarter-inch needle to make sure that you're not going too deep. I sometimes still see half-inch needles on things, but I think you got too much of a risk of hitting the muscle and causing damage there. So you really want to go on that 45 degree angle. This is a photo of actually the good air vaccine, because that becomes really important that you give it subcut, because we get a lot of tissue reactions there. Okay, and you want to give it underneath the skin. The other one, scabby guard, that we vaccinate for it's a live vaccine, so we've got to be careful ourselves, but you want to just scratch them. You don't want to be drawing blood, because that blood will wash that live vaccine away. And you want to give it in an area where they can't get their mouth to it, because it's live, they can then get it. So if you're doing don't do it in the back leg, because then if you've got a lamb suckling, they can get it. Best spot is underneath the arm. Yeah. So that's with vaccination site that I often get questions about. So, but you guys have vaccinated enough and seen the pluses and the minuses. So, yeah. So these are some vaccination site injuries. Again, a lot of it is, or it can be with any injection site, whether you're giving antibiotics, whether you're giving a vaccine, whether you're giving some form of supplementation. So these are all good air, and you can see like causes a lot of trimming and a lot of issues there. So where this, I can even get it where it can go in and impinge on the spinal cord. So this video here, you can see that I've got animals that are tripping over and got neurological signs, and this was from a good air vaccination. And this one down here, we've all seen that. I think it might have been during COVID or something, the Woolies or Coles, someone bought a lamb roast, cooked it up, then went to cut in it and hit a boil, which was great. CLA, it looks like CLA to me, I reckon, was then just oozing out there, which was great. Put people off lamb for a while. So I think it even put me off for a little bit there, but only a week. I love my lamb. So, but there's definitely things to be conscious of, because at the end of the day, any trimmings or anything like that or any loss of stock end up costing you guys money. So vaccination program is something that I definitely get asked a lot about. And I don't think there's one program that fits all. And there's questions you guys need to be asking yourself, or you can ask other people, ask for advice of what's going to work for you. What's going to be the most cost benefit vaccination program for you to use, right? So first off, one of the main things is, what is the prevalence of that disease in your area? Do you get a lot of it? Are they going into a high-risk environment? You know, am I in a high OJD area? You know, you've got to be asking those kind of questions, because sometimes the answer is no. But not only the prevalence of that disease, what is the cost and impact of that disease? Am I investing in a vaccine to prevent it? Am I saving money? Or am I going to preventing that disease going to save me money? Or am I just wasting my money, right, in terms of it? So something like even looking at the class of animals, like, I'm not going to bother vaccinating my wethers that are going for slaughter because I'm not keeping them over 2 years of age. Am I going to bother vaccinating them with good egg, which is an expensive vaccine? No. So, yeah, it's asking those kind of questions. Or am I looking at trading these ewes, you know? You know, are they going on to a property where people are going to use them for joining long term, and I want to be able to access that market consistently? Or am I potentially going to get a bit of a premium? Maybe not this year, but on some years it does apply with good air vaccinated ewes. Are these animals going into a feedlot? Are they going to go in a high risk pop kidney environment? Those kind of questions you've got to be asking for. So, and it's also, what is your attitude to risk? Are you a gambler? You know, there's always some form of gambling. I think in farming and putting in a crop, there's always gamble. But how much of a risk do you want to take? So is preventing the disease going to be worth the vaccination, or am I willing to run the gauntlet? You know, you've got to be asking yourself these questions. So, yeah. And something else I always get asked is for, like, the selenium and B12 within a vaccine, all right? Now, you've got to remember, these vaccines, the dose rate usually of these trace elements is to dose 10 to 15 kilo, 20 kilo lamb at marking, right? It's safe because we need it to be levels that's safe to feed that. It's not going to be supplementing our adult 60, 70, whatever kilo use. So we've got to be aware of that when we're adding to it. But we've also, like, B12, if we're in a B12 sufficient area doing it pre-lambing, you know, sometimes I can just boost up those liver levels and supplement that a bit onto the lamb, and it's an easy way of doing it. But if there's deficiencies, major deficiencies going on, maybe I need to look at a different strategy there to do that. So it's asking all those questions and never hesitate to reach out and ask for help. So this is just an example. Something else I often get asked is 6-in-1 and a 3-in-1. Okay, we do not have liver fluke in WA, and black disease is usually from liver fluke in the liver, and that is covered in the 6-in-1, not the 3-in-1. So 6-in-1, sometimes not. Now, we do have malignant edema, which is another clostridial disease, right? And like swell-headed rams, their heads completely swell up and they get pus and that coming out of their eyeballs. So my ram flock, they get it from their fighting. So they start fighting and then the bacteria is opportunistic and gets in there. So if I was a seed stock producer selling rams, I would definitely look at a 6-in-1, because I don't want someone buying a ram and then him dying. I want them to be able to wanting to come back to go, look, I've got really good survivability out of those rams. I'm going back there. Malignant edema, I think sometimes if we get a few lambing difficulties, I think I can see it sometimes in ewes, but it's not huge. So I really think as a minimum, a 3-in-1. But again, it's your choice depending on what you're doing and what your enterprise is. Okay, but there are all those kind of questions and that you can ask, and sometimes it's even nutting through those things. So this is, again, a survey of, like, Australia. So most people are vaccinating their ewe lambs with a 6-in-1, a a smaller percentage with a 3-in-1. I actually think it would be a bit different in WA, and I do have a slide coming up next with that. 24% are doing Good Air, Gabby Mouth 14%. I think that's actually a bit higher. And Erivac, yeah, 12%. So that is generally an overview of what nationally producers are doing. Again, this is producers that responded to that survey as well. So here we can see WA, and it shows, yeah, what I see is majority of people are using a 3-in-1 compared to a 6-in-1. So red here is in WA. That's nationally. Tassie, very high for a 6-in-1. Okay. And that's just generally where everyone stands with what they're doing. Okay. So in our, like, a 3-in-1, we tend, a 3-in-1 covers pulpy kidney, tetanus, and also CLA, right? Cheesy gland. So the black leg, black disease, and malignant edema are covered in your 6-in-1s, right? Okay. Pulpy kidney is probably one of the main ones, right? And the bacteria, usually when they're in certain environments, the bacteria increases within their intestines. It goes bloody crazy, producing a lot of toxins. And usually around feed changes, we see it. So breaking the season on lush green feed, or going into a feedlot, or some cases in lucerne. And then we get them dying from enterotoxemia. So it's the bacteria producing a toxin which ends up knocking them off, right? Okay. And so animals going into a feedlot is something that is generally the highest risk. Tetanus is, again, with any injuries, lamb marking, and those kind of things. And cheesy gland is, so this bacteria is usually, it's in their lungs, right? And with the lymph nodes there that have it. But we also get it in other organs inside or on external lymph nodes, right, as well. So we've all done that. We, you know, you've seen shearer cut up the back leg and open up a boil, or, you know, a cheesy gland, and pus going everywhere. So this can cause a lot of losses in terms of trimmings and contamination in some cases of carcasses. But something that we tend to not really acknowledge is with CLA in that first year when they're getting exposed to it, because they've got to put it in, a lot of immune system gets in and encapsulating these abscesses, and that we get quite a bit of a loss in clean fleece weight in that first year of about 4 to 7%. Yeah, so that can be an added cost where we're not seeing any outward signs of disease or anything like that, but we're getting loss of production. And our 3-in-1s, they cover it, right? So the other ones are black disease, which I said was usually associated with liver fluke, which we don't have. Blackleg is when we've got like grass seeds and injuries and damaged muscle that we can get it. And then malignant edema is like swell head in lambs or ewes that are lambing or at high risk. So in terms of just a general vaccination program, like a 3-in-1, it's relatively cheap, right? And we can get one protection, but we need to give those two to a lamb. So at marking and weaning. But also pre-lambing in those ewes. We want to make sure those lambs are covered when they're getting up to that time of marking. So by giving that pre-lambing, we're covering those lambs up until that time, right? The other one is that if I'm putting lambs into a feedlot and they haven't been vaccinated for 3 months, it really doesn't hurt to give another vaccination to get that booster for pulpy kidney on induction, because it can really help prevent the cases that we have there. And like I said before, I tend to recommend a 6-in-1 to rams to cover them for swell head. Again, most seed stock producers are using a 6-in-1 in their rams. But again, every property is different. Everything is different. So it all depends on your property and what you're doing. It is your choice, right? OJD. So OJD is, like, it was first detected in the early 2000s in WA, and I think in 2003 or 2000, and then we found in about 2003 It was on several properties, and those properties it'd been on for some time. So we were in denial that we didn't have it here. The thing is with this disease, right, is it's slow and insidious, right? So from the time an animal gets it to the time that we see signs can be 3 to 5 years, right? So it's slow. And this disease is in most sheep areas of Australia. So with trading sheep and moving sheep, people are in denial that it wasn't in every state, right? There's just different environments where it survived better. So usually out in our eastern wheat belt, it's not going to survive long in 40 degree heat out in that area. So if we've got a higher stocking density rate, more pastures when we're not turning over the soil, it's going to survive for longer and there's going to be a bigger environmental contamination, right? So that's where we tend to see more of it. So west of Albany Highway, yeah, I would be vaccinating. Katanning and that across, depending on my enterprise, I think it'd be highly advisable. Eastern wheat belt, I'm a bit on the fence. I do recommend my studs vaccinate for it because it gives you market access for your rams, right? Now, the main thing is it just presents as ill thrift. We don't always get scouring. Occasionally you do. So they just start losing weight, look like shit, and then die within about 3 months. One of the best things about this vaccine, it's a once in a lifetime. If we had a once in a lifetime vaccination for lice, we'd be bloody oath. That is amazing. It's once in a lifetime to cover that animal. So we recommend giving it across the landmark and cradle, but I wouldn't be doing it in animals that I'm not keeping over 2 years of age. Waste of money. Like, unless I'm selling them to someone that's going to use them as surplus, you know, for in terms of breeders or anything like that, or wethers that they're going to keep for wool, right? Anything that's going off for slaughter, waste of money and time vaccinating them. So just do your keepers, right? Best time to do it is in landmarking because it's spread by the fecal oral route. So as soon as they are starting to graze, they're at risk of picking it up. No vaccine is 100%. So if we can vaccinate them before they're grazing a hell of a lot, we can have a better uptake of that vaccine. Something I really want to say about vaccinating with OJD, be careful. I've had numerous people self-inject that have had to go through multiple surgeries. So do use the Securus vaccination gun. Now, the first time you use it, trust me, you're going to want to ditch it because it's a different action than we're used to and we all hate change, don't we? So, but I would recommend take it out of its packet the night before you're going to use it. Don't put a needle on it and just practice that action like in a pillow or a cushion to get a feel for it. And once you get a feel for it, it works really well at protecting you, right? I've had so many people where they've been using just a quick shot, you know, with no protection of that needle, drop the needle down, stab themselves in the leg, stab themselves in the hand, and yeah, and it can be a long drawn out. And you guys are your biggest asset on the farm, and if you go down, you know, it's not good. So I would be really looking at, you know, persevering and using that secure vaccinator. Okay, so the next one, Campylobacter. What I tend to find with Campy is you can see the map here of where they've been doing testing and that on it, okay? Campy doesn't become a problem unless the ewes are exposed for the first time when they're pregnant, right? That's where we get the abortion. Usually if they're not pregnant, they get a bit unwell, they get over it. It's if they're pregnant when they're first exposed that we get issues. Right. So our maiden ewes are usually the most susceptible. And I tend to find they're exposed during their first winter, right, on the farm after weaning. So which is when our ewes are close to lambing or about to lamb or in the process of lambing. So if they're exposed that time, we can get abortion storms like that case that I had. We had like overall, in those mobs that were affected, we had 20% losses of those abortions in those ewes. 20% of those ewes aborted in those pens that were affected, right? And it tends to be when they're about that 9 to 15 months of age. The bacteria tends to survive for longer in pastures and in those cooler environments, as you can see from those. And there's two types of Campylobacter. There's Campylobacter fetus and Campylobacter jejuni, right? This is spread by the fecal oral route. So when we put animals in confinement, they're more exposed. So there's been a couple of cases of the jejuni, which doesn't typically cause abortion, in confinement situations because we're putting them into an environment with high exposure. So when we're feeding out on the ground, they're more likely to eat the shit and pick it up. So those kind of things can be a problem. I tend to recommend with this vaccine to give two shots in the first year of life, and then I'm really hesitant about the booster shot. I'm not completely convinced that that's required, right? But if we give those two shots, like our priming and our next one, I tend to find they're protected really well, right? So confinement is something I'd be, if I'm looking at confinement and I'm in those cooler environments, it'd be something that I'd be thinking about. We can actually test animals to see if you've got it on your property, but having it on your property and it causing disease is, you know, depending on your lambing time. So if you're early lamber, you may not have that issue, right? Because of what that environment it survives in. So again, it's a lot of times going through and discussing how these diseases work. Am I going to get benefit out of that vaccination? So yeah, so it's not for everyone. Okay. So arthritis. Now this is a big one, right? So I think it's really important that when we're looking at whether I'm going to be giving the arthritis vaccine, we look at the level it is on the farm, okay? And every farm is different, right? I generally, most farms have 0.5 to 2% of arthritis, right? Okay. But we tend to find that it usually becomes very obvious in our hoggets and that. And it ends up costing us a lot of money, right? Because we fed it right through. Those animals have poor growth rates. We get a lot of trimming of carcasses. And we've spent all that money to get that lamb animal up to that. And then we're losing money because they're not performing as they should, right? So this graph down here shows the percentage, right, of inspected lines that had at least one sheep with arthritis. So WA, 60% had sheep over 2 years of age that had lines that had at least one animal with arthritis. And then in our younger sheep, it was back down to just under 30%. But we do see arthritis. There are other causes for arthritis, but this is one that we can prevent. So when we're looking at it, we've got to be looking at how it's spread, right? So lambs usually pick it up sooner after birth because the ewes actually hold this bacteria back in their tonsils and their pharynx, like at the back of their throat. So as they're cleaning that lamb, they're spreading it, right? So that is where it is spread a lot, right? But it can also be spread at marking as well. So it's important that we understand that because when we look at whether we're going to vaccinate for it, we've got to be looking at our cost benefit, right? And I always ask, like, what is the incidence of arthritis on your property and what are we looking at? And cost benefit gets really high when we've got a really good repro rate and we've got a lot of lambs. It's a lot easier to justify. But again, some people I find they're getting a very low incidence by just doing their marking vaccination. But if I find they've got a high rate, I'd be like, yeah, maybe we need to include it in our pre-lambing, you know, vaccination to booster to our ewes to drop that incidence down, okay? Because I tend to find if we vaccinate for erysipelas, right, we tend to minimise the other bacteria that cause arthritis as well. We're not exactly sure how, but that's what I tend to see. Okay, so they're the kind of questions that I'd be looking at. Okay, do I need to be giving it pre-lambing to my ewes if I'm getting a high incidence because we're getting that you know, my marking one isn't really covering it, but definitely the one at land marking, and most people in WA do it. But again, every property is different in what questions we're asking and what we need to be considering, okay? So scabby mouth, we have covered up quite a bit on this. Yeah, so scabby mouth is a live vaccine, so we've got to be careful because we can get it. And even dealing with animals with scabby mouth. I had a friend actually hospitalised. She got bitten by a pet lamb that she was rearing and it had scabby mouth, and then she got secondary bacterial infection. She rang me because she said, oh, my arm's not quite right today. And not that I'm a doctor, like a human doctor, just a vet. And she was saying, oh, I've got these red marks going up my arm. And I'm like, get yourself to emergency right now, because she was going septic. And she spent, I think, a week in hospital on an IV drip. So do take care of yourselves out there and be aware of these things. With scabby mouth, we can get mild lesions and to really severe lesions where they get these secondary bacterial infections. Mainly we get it around the lips and the mouth and all those, but we can also get it on the nose. I see a lot up on the nose as well. We can also get it around the feet, and they can get it with derma as well, what we call strawberry foot. So they can get it around the feet. You know, they're chewing down there if they've got a bit of derma down there, and then they get scabby mouth. So we call it strawberry foot because it looks like a strawberry on the back of their foot. Also, another one, I see it in ewes, which can affect their milking and rearing of the lamb. They can get it on teats, right, as well. Or the lamb can spread it to their teats as well. So all it takes is a little cut for the, and then it gives an opportunity for this virus to get in there, right? Okay, so grazing on stubbles, on pellets and that. A lot of times in mild cases, it can be self-limiting and it's a virus. It's got to run its course, right? But it's when we get those severe cases where we get these secondary bacterial infections and that, where it really affects their feed consumption, right? Okay, when we vaccinate, it is actually a live vaccine like we've been talking about. So you're scratching it, you're giving it. It doesn't prevent them from getting the disease all the time. It just tends to mean they get a milder form of it. So more lesions like this than like this, right? The thing is, this is a live vaccine. So when they lose a scab, whether it's from the vaccine or from a scab, you know, that forms from the scabby on their mouth or wherever, that is introducing the virus to the environment. Out in the open, it dies off pretty quick, but it can persist for long periods around sheds and in feeders and those kind of things. So it is important that if we've had a bit of scabby, like we're cleaning out feeders, if we've got a new line coming in, because we don't want to spread it. So again, it's determining your incidence about whether you're going to scabby vaccinate. And if I'm selling towards the live export market, like to the Saudi market in particular, you've got to have evidence that you have actually scratched and have a history of that. So it's really important that if you want that market access, that you are vaccinating. Okay. So it's having those considerations when you're doing it as well. Because you've got to have it on your vendor deck and that when you're selling to there, and you've got to show evidence. I think you've even got to show records that you've done it. So it's really important that we think about that when we're giving it. Yeah, so that's generally what I recommend for scabby and looking at it. But again, be careful, guys. It is a live vaccine. So, and if you do get severe cases with a lot of bacterial infection, you know, if they're in a feedlot, pull that animal out before they lose that scab, and we may need to consider giving those some antibiotics, because the virus is going to run its course, but if that bacteria gets in there and it's really severe, sometimes I've had to give them antibiotics to get over it. Okay. So essentially, what are my take-home messages? If you've got any concerns, reach out, communicate with your veterinarian. There's vets out there that love talking sheep and are a wealth of knowledge, and there are people out there that you can reach into. Be aware that there's these subsidies that you can tap into. We pay for it anyway in our taxes, so you may as well get some money back on it, you know, go tap into it. Because all this is about is enabling you guys to make informed decisions with your flock. And now with vaccination, there's so much that we can't control. So I'm all about controlling what we can control. And preventative medicine, it just far outweighs reaction. We can be chasing our tail. So prevent with vaccination what we can prevent, because there's so much other shit out there that can come back and slap us in the face that we can't control. So do what we can, okay? Yeah, so I'd like to thank the Livestock Collective for having me on and AWI for this partnership program. And, yeah, sorry I've rambled on a lot.
Don't be sorry. It's been incredible. I've actually been frantically taking notes as well. So, no, we appreciate it. I think you covered a majority of the questions. A couple I had here, someone sent through, you've got them worried now. Should I start vaccinating for scabby mouth? I haven't before in my lambs.
If I haven't vaccinated before, you don't have it in your environment. If you haven't seen it on you, why start vaccinating if you don't have it in my environment? The only reason I would vaccinate is if I had wanted to access that live export market, okay, because you've got to do that. But if you do start vaccinating, you're going to be introducing it to your environment and I highly would recommend continuing, depending on your incidence, because I have had cases where people have stopped for a couple of years and then we've had years where it's just come out a lot bigger because they've been exposed, okay? So they're the kind of questions I'd be asking. It's not a yes or a no, it's I've got more questions, you know, to help you make that informed decision, okay?
And that's a great answer. And the next one I thought was, how exactly is OJD spread? I'm worried about my neighbour's goats. They've bought them from an OJD area. I don't vaccinate my sheep.
Okay. So OJD is a bit of a different one there. So OJD goats, it's spread by the fecal oral route, right? And there's several forms of Yonis disease. There's ovine Yonis and bovine Yonis. So goats can be implicated as well with Yonis disease, but it's spread by the fecal oral route. So if an animal with it, they start actually excreting it in their feces by about 2 years of age, but they don't show signs until they're 3 and 5. So you can have a clinically normal animal contaminating your environment. So by having a good biosecurity, and it doesn't matter what your neighbour does, you're protected, right? It can flow through. I'd be asking about water courses and those kind of things from a neighbour because it can spread. Less likely, but I'm not saying nil. It's usually through trading sheep. It spreads mostly, but it can follow down water courses and flooding, looking at the water flow. So I would probably mitigate if I had a neighbour that, you know, water flowed from, they had quite a high stocking density rate next door, I might use older sheep on those paddocks rather than my young, susceptible lambing ewe, you know, and lambing ewes, right, where they're going to be exposed. So you can kind of mitigate those things. Who says you don't have it? You know what I mean? If we don't, you know, a lot of times it can be that silent killer that it can be lingering there for a long time in your flock before we get a significant number of deaths. Because how many times you go, oh, that's a bloody old ewe, she's just got skinny, she's dead. You know, it's probably just something else, you know. It's only once it gets to a certain incidence that we suddenly go, oh, you know, and we've missed the boat by the time it's got there. So I'd be looking at where you're farming, your environment, what's your history of your sheep? Have you traded sheep? Are you a closed flock? Like looking at those kind of things to see whether you should be vaccinating or not.
Cool.
That's the question.
I think, you covered everything else. That was a really great presentation. So thank you so much again for coming on. I've no doubt you will have more questions come through from growers, I think.
Yeah, well, we're always available. Always reach out, give us a call. We're always at the end of the phone line. Like usually if it's just a quick question, you know, just want a quick question, I don't charge for it. But if it goes into something a bit longer that we're working through more, you know, we just like it to be cost effective for people because we think it's important that people get the right information.
Amazing. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries, Tim.